Single plum dark sail, moist, palpitant, sticky winged nymph. Taposiris is dead among its tumbling columns and sea marks, vanished the harpoon men, Mariotis under a sky of hot lilac. Summer, buff sand, hot marble sky. Autumn, swollen bruise greys. Winter, freezing snow, cool sand, clear sky panels glittering with mica, washed delta greens, magnificent starscapes. And spring? Ah, there is no spring in the delta. No sense of refreshment and renewal in things. One is plunged out of winter into wax effigy of a summer too hot to breathe. But here, at least, in Alexandria, the sea breaths save us from the tideless weight of summer nothingness, creeping over the bar among the warships to flutter the striped awnings of the cafes upon the Grande Corniche. I would never have... The city, half-imagined, yet wholly real, begins and ends in us, roots lodged in our memory. Why must I return to it night after night, writing here by the fire of carob wood, while the Aegean wind clutches at this island house, clutching and releasing it, bending back the cypresses like bows? Have I not said enough about Alexandria? Am I to be reinfected once more by the dream of it and the memory of its inhabitants? Dreams I had thought safely locked up on paper, confided to the strong rooms of memory. You will think I am indulging myself. It is not so. A single chance factor has altered everything, has turned me back upon my tracks, a memory which catches sight of itself in a mirror. Justine, Melissa, Claire, there were so few of us, really. You would have thought them easily disposed of in a single book, would you not? So would I. So did I. Dispersed now by time and circumstance, the circuit broken forever. I had set myself the task of trying to recover them in words, reinstate them in memory, allot to each his and her position in my time, selfishly. And with that writing complete, I felt that I had turned a key upon the doll's house of our actions. Indeed, I saw my lovers and friends no longer as living people, but as coloured transfers of the mind, inhabiting my papers now, no longer the city, like tapestry figures. It was difficult to concede to them any more common reality than to the words I had used about them. What has recalled me to myself? But in order to go on, it is necessary to go back. Not that anything I wrote about them is untrue, far from it. Yet when I wrote, the full facts were not at my disposal. The picture I drew was a provisional one, like the picture of a lost civilization deduced from a few fragmented vases, an inscribed tablet, an amulet, some human bones, a gold smiling death mask. "We live," writes Pursewarden somewhere, "lives based upon selected fictions. Our view of reality is conditioned by our position in space and time, not by our personalities, as we like to think. Thus, every interpretation of reality is based upon a unique position. 2 paces east or west, and the whole picture is changed." Something of this order. And as for human characters, whether real or invented, there are no such animals. Each psyche is really an anthill of opposing predispositions. Personality as something with fixed attributes is an illusion, but a necessary illusion, if we are to love. As for the something that remains constant, the shy kiss of Melissa is predictable, for example, amateurish as an early form of printing, or the frowns of Justine, which cast a shadow over those blazing dark eyes, orbits of the Sphinx at noon. "In the end," says Pursewarden, "everything will be found to be true of everybody. Saint and villain are co-sharers." He is right. I am making every attempt to be matter of fact. In the last letter which reached me from Balthazar,